Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome to British Indie Film Club, a new limited podcast series brought to you by Biffa and Little White Lies magazine, where we meet some of the most exciting voices from the British independent film world. I'm Leila Latif.
And I'm Karis Aldridge. And today we're going to be speaking to writer-director Nida Manzoor about her kick-ass coming-of-age comedy Polite Society and finding out about the two of her favourite all-time British films. But first, here's a little taste of what we have in store for you on the show over the next few months. Each episode, we will be meeting a talented actor or director to find out how they got their break in film and what they love most about their profession and what they're working on right now. To celebrate Biffa's 25th birthday, we'll also be asking our guests to pick a film from the Biffa archives to discuss, either a cult classic or a contemporary gem from the past 25 years.
For those of you who are regular listeners to Truth in Movies, you may recognise me. I'm a film critic, broadcaster and columnist.
And I'm Karis. I'm a film sales exec and a podcast host. Over the last 7 years, I've worked across film sales, marketing and distribution on UK independent films. And I've also participated in the Creative England Producing Course, which supports up and coming UK producers. And I'd highly recommend to any producers who want to do something like that.
Well, you've just inspired my next career change.
Do it.
Well, I mean, you this week got to speak to Nida, and I absolutely adored her film, and I loved her ever since she was kind of making TV shows. She's such an exciting talent. But could you kind of set up for the uninitiated who Nida is?
Yes. Oh my gosh, I was so excited to speak to Nida. I'd seen interviews of her, and she's just like such a fun person. But yeah, she's doing a bunch of stuff at the moment. I mean, she did direct a couple of episodes of Doctor Who, which is pretty fun. And she also wrote, directed and created We Are Lady Parts, which is on Channel 4 in the UK. It's on Peacock in the US. And this is adapted from her short film, Lady Parts. And We Are Lady Parts follows an all-woman Muslim punk rock band. And it's really interesting the way that it kind of all came about. She kind of talks about the fact that it was written out of this frustration. She was pitching a bunch of shows to a bunch of production companies and just felt very frustrated that all they wanted to hear from her, or the voice that they wanted her to bring, was this very reductive, almost harrowing image of what a Muslim woman is, you know, supposed to be in UK. And she felt really frustrated at that. And that's where We Are Lady Parts came in. And it's this really fun, just very cool series. It's been a bit of a cult classic already. So that's really exciting. And then this is her debut, her feature debut, Polite Society. It premiered in Sundance earlier this year. And it's the story of these two sisters who are living in Shepherd's Bush in London. There's Rhea. She is a wannabe stunt woman who is just like living her best life as a, you know, going to school with her friends, and her older sister Lena, who has recently dropped out of art school. And they're, you know, these really tight-knit sisters in this tight-knit family, and that all seems to be kind of jeopardized when she meets a man, and this man becomes her fiance. And it's all about kind of the breaking of a sisterhood bond, and it's done in just such a fun, exciting, fresh and original way. So yeah, Nida gets into all of that in this discussion, and I'm excited for you to hear.
Oh, it really is just like nothing I've ever seen before, and I say that as somebody whose entire personality is watching a ton of films. But yeah, this really feels like revolutionary. It's so fun, it's so funny. I don't want to give it anything away, but like the villain who emerges is just like one of the most exciting screen villains I've seen for a really long time.
I love it. It's so good.
But she does seem to be like a very, you know, there's an optimistic feeling, I think, with it, with British independent film at the moment, because, you know, how well After Sun did. Blue Jean did really well. And then just at Sundance itself, there was Rye Lane that was so lovely. You know, there was, you know, Polite Society, of course. And I think some of the big awards went to Charlotte Regan's Scrapper, which I also thought was absolutely excellent. You know, they're all British, they're all independent, and they're all kind of female filmmakers making these incredible debuts.
It's honestly, it's so great to see. And I think it's really inspiring for upcoming filmmakers as well to see that career trajectory, and to see them recognized as well. Because Sundance is incredibly hard. The amount of submissions to the amount of films that actually get picked is, you know, the smallest fraction. So to see so much kind of British talent being recognized is amazing.
And, you know, as much as we do say that this is kind of a time to be hopeful, there are some also rather unsettling things happening from across the pond. What with the writers' strike, we may have an AI written dystopia ahead of us with all these wonderful writers being replaced by machines. Yeah. Our Netflix overlords have a lot to pay for it in some regards, I think.
Damn you, Netflix. Yeah, totally. We're recording this on, what, the 4th or 5th of May? And it's been 2 days since the writer's strike. And it's weird. Like, I mean, I remember it. I was quite young, but I remember the last strike because it was in 2007. And really strangely, the one thing that I remember the most is the show Lost. Because if you remember, the idea of the writer's strike, I mean, obviously, it had a huge impact. It impacted the industry. I think they lost $2.1 billion. They striked for 100 days. It was a big, big deal. And yeah, a bunch of shows either cut their seasons short or just had really noticeably terrible writing. And I feel like everyone kind of remembers that time, even if they weren't part of those industry discussions. You just remember like wondering what was going on, because obviously it was a very different landscape to what it is now. But it's a very big deal and not something to be taken lightly. It's really unfair that writers are, apparently half of writers are on minimum wage. And yeah, it's a pretty dire landscape at the moment. So it'll be interesting to see how it all turns out. But yeah, are you a fan of talk shows? Because I know all the talk shows are kaput.
I'm not that big a fan of talk shows, I must say. Some of the kind of interviews that you see on them, you're just like, I can't believe anyone wrote this. Maybe AI should be given a go. Yeah. But I do really worry about the impact that this is going to have on cinema and on like quality television, because I think a lot of the rise of reality TV was directly, you know, happened because of the 2007 strike. Just the fact that we need to make stuff without writers, without people being compensated. And as much as I don't mind the odd bit of trashy reality TV, that world also really exploits a lot of its subjects. So hopefully we can, the success of things like Polite Society are going to make people realize that actually if you give people their voices to make fresh and interesting material, wonderful things happen.
Yeah, 100%. And I also do think that we are in an age where every studio, every streamer is just scrambling for original IP. And we're in the era of franchises and remakes, and having the opportunity to watch something like Polite Society is so unbelievably refreshing for the fact that it is a completely original idea. And it's sad to say that that's not seen on screen that much anymore. So yeah, Nida should definitely be celebrated for that.
Yeah, I so enjoy a film ending and knowing that I don't have to then sit through three more mid-credit sequences setting this up to the wider world and trying to sell kids a load of merch. Yes.
Yeah, definitely agreed.
Oh, and very jealous. I mean, such a talented director, and you got to meet her IRL. No Zooming for you. You got to go and do the glamorous in-person interview that is sadly too rare.
So exciting. I know. I did. I got to travel to Soho. I was in Soho Hotel. It's gorgeous. She was as delightful and smiley and generous as you think that she would be. And yeah, it was a fabulous time, really. I could only wish that I had more time with her. She did give me a hug as well, which I really appreciated when I left. So yeah.
Yeah. You can't get a hug over Zoom. I mean, this is one of my bigger complaints of like, there's just something that I think, particularly with an interview, like you can just bond so much better with them when you get to do it in person.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Zoom, there is a slight lack of intimacy, isn't there? And then when you see someone in person, it's like, oh, there's like a slight sigh of relief, a slight like, yeah, feeling of relaxing. But no, it was so nice. And she was, yeah, as I said, like very, very generous with her time. I could see them trying to like rush me out of the room. And she was like, no, I wish we could stay and chat for longer. And even in that short period of time, we were really able to cover quite a lot of stuff, actually, from her kind of early career and the things that she learned from working on short films to kind of creating this relationship, ongoing relationship that she has with Tim Bevan and the Working Title team, to, yeah, just like kind of her growing as a writer-director and understanding the nature of how she enjoys, you know, composing herself on set and in both capacities. And yeah, like her influences and everything, really. So yeah, we really got to dig into a lot of stuff over a very short period of time. So yeah, it's very lucky.
Oh, well, yeah, I absolutely loved listening to this, and I hope the listeners enjoy it as much as I did.
Yes, enjoy. Hey, hello.
Hi.
Okay, so Nida.
Yes.
It is amazing. It is honestly such a pleasure to chat to you today for the Biffa podcast. Thanks. About your career and, of course, your incredible new film, Polite Society. I would be lying if I said that I hadn't already looked up How to Become a Stuntwoman since watching.
I love that.
But I do want to do a very quick kind of career retrospective to how you got to the point that you are at today. So I know that you were a runner and mm-hmm. then a director's assistant, mm-hmm. and then you wrote and directed three short films.
Yes.
And I was wondering, in doing so, what did it teach you about yourself and like how you like to kind of make films in your own process?
Yeah, I mean, directing my short films was really where I found my voice, and it sort of drew me to the kind of tone I wanted to work in. I also learned what sort of director I wanted to be. You know, I didn't go to film school, and I'd worked as a runner, as you say, and on some sets, and I'd seen directing that didn't sort of fit right for me, because I'm quite an introvert. I like kind of quiet on set and sort of thinking space. And oftentimes I'd seen like quite boisterous directing. So getting to make my own work just really helped me learn my own style of directing, find what works for me, find what works for actors I was working with and crew. And yeah, again, you find your team when you make those first shorts, you find the kind of people that you collaborate well with. So it's just the best kind of learning ground for finding yourself as an artist, really.
Yeah, and yeah. Knowing that there's not one single way of doing it.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah, totally. And then, of course, you then directed two episodes of the beloved Doctor Who.
Yes.
What was it about that experience that kind of ignited your passion for the genre?
I really loved directing Doctor Who because it was just such a step up. I'd never worked in sort of the machine of like a big budget television show, you know, where huge sets were getting built, you were kind of planning monsters or big visual effects. And I just loved it. I loved thinking about what the aliens would look like and the costuming of them. And then, all, you know, just creating these insane worlds, but like grounding it in character. So for me, it was such a kind of a joy, and I realized that I had a real kind of a love of aliens, of spaceships, of kind of wild genre to tell kind of very grounded human stories. And I learned that on Doctor Who. And also, you know, I kind of went through a lot of imposter syndrome getting that job because I thought like it was such a big step up for me, and I just really had a lot of self-doubt, and doing it and going through it just kind of gave me confidence and gave me confidence that I'm good at this job. And yeah, getting to work with great actors was amazing. And you realize that directing a short film is actually not that different to directing an episode of Doctor Who. You know, the day-to-day job is the same, and it was just kind of remembering that, because you get just a big crew who have all this expertise, amazing VFX producers who you can bring to, and you can bring references to them, and they're like, yes, we can do this alien and we'll do it this way. And you know, and being kind of able to not to be open about where your knowledge kind of stops, of like, I don't know how I would achieve this, and then have all these amazing professionals tell you exactly how they would do it. And actually not knowing sort of makes people warm to you quicker in a way, because they bring their knowledge to the table. And that's just like the best kind of collaboration, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And of course, we have to talk about We Are Lady Parts, which is your project that you not only created, you wrote it, mm-hmm. you directed it. And the show, it feels so rebellious and punk rock, not just because of the music, obviously, but because of the themes that you are exploring. Mm-hmm. And is it true that the actresses, they all play the instruments in the show?
Yeah,
they
had to learn. They were in like punk boot camp. They were learning guitar. My brother was teaching them all how to play their instruments. Oh, it was like hardcore.
And just for the fans out there, mm-hmm. this could be an exclusive. Is there going to be a tour?
Want it to happen. It's like getting the actors' schedules to align for that kind of thing is like the hard thing, but I would so love that.
So of course, let's talk about Polite Society. Mm.
This is your highly anticipated feature debut, and it has already been met with so much praise from critics and fans. They're calling it irreverent. Mm-hmm. They are calling it an instant classic. I mean, so many quotable one-liners already. I love when the girls are like scheming and they're like, verbiage, yeah. Verbiage. It's just so good. Was it a daunting leap going from TV to film? And what are the big differences between the small screen and the big screen?
You know, I found it less daunting than I thought I would. I think in part because I had working title who I made my TV show with. And so I had the same producers. I was in the same world. Stepping up to the film, it was, again, like the people I trusted with me. And then also crew-wise, all, you know, pretty much all my heads of department were the same, bar a few who I'd worked with on Lady Parts. So it felt like this lovely continuity. It was, like, again, my family in terms of the creatives I work with. So it felt really like a natural progression. And then you just have more toys, you know, you have more fun bits of kit to play with, you have a bit more time. But then again, you always still lean on, you know, I always felt I leant on my kind of short film background, my low budget TV background, where you've got to make a day and you don't have enough time and you've got to just like be really kind of, you know, careful and specific on what you're going to shoot. And it's weird, even when you're making a studio film, you still have to think on your feet, adjust, adapt. So yeah, it felt like I had a big budget, but at times I was still kind of leaning on that kind of scrappier, gonzo kind of filmmaking.
Yeah, yeah. Lovely continuation. And this is very much a kind of a genre-bending film.
Yes.
I have tried to describe it. I hope I do this justice. I've said it is a wholly original, fun, frenetic action comedy with a sucker punch of sisterhood sentimentality.
Oh, I love that.
I hope that's okay.
I love that.
You know, it's got elements of Ocean's 11, it's Scott Pilgrim, there are elements of Sex Education. Mm-hmm. Do you remember your original pitch to working title?
I don't remember it because, like you, I really struggle to pitch my own film. I'm like, it's this, it's that. And then it's sort of like,
everything, you know, in the best way.
It's
yeah.
everything. And I remember when I spoke to Tim Bevan about it and he read the script and, you know, it was a film that I've been had in the back burner for like 10 years. It got passed on by everyone and most people thought it was just too much. It was like, you're doing too much here. Whereas Tim Bevan at Working Title was like, you should do more, like lean into the wackiness. And that was the most empowering note I've ever got, because most of the time I felt like I was being told to be less me, or like, can you just be a little bit more, just chill, a bit quiet. And so I'm so lucky that I got to make it with producers who were like, embrace all the genre, embrace all the things you love, because it became like a film that I look at and I'm like, this is exactly how I've always wanted it to be.
So interesting that you say that about kind of feeling that you have to almost suppress yourself, because I do also think that is something that comes with being a woman of colour.
Yeah.
I get that note a lot all the time. Mm. And yeah, this is, you know, a hybrid genre. What do you think it is about, you know, leaning into a hybrid genre that kind of really lends itself so well to telling a kind of diasporic story?
I think for me, I loved using genre because we're so often left out from all storytelling, but particularly genre storytelling as people of color. You know, it's sort of like almost not for you. You don't exist in dramas really, but even less so in a comedy and even less so in an action movie. So I wanted to reclaim those spaces and be like, no, this is for us as well. I'm excited about genre because it's like a structure people know, and then when you subvert it with the kinds of characters you're using or like flip it on its head, it's a kind of excitement of like, I know this well, but it also feels fresh and new. And I think it's also the kind of films I love. I love genre movies growing up, and they're always the ones that I'm just like most excited about when I feel, you know, they're using a tool like horror or comedy to express something very sort of, you know, poignant. That's always been the kinds of movies that have moved and excited me.
Mm, yeah, definitely. And you've just mentioned that this film has been over a decade in the making. I'm sure it has in that way gone through many iterations.
Yeah.
Are there things that have changed a lot since its inception, or are there like, what are the craziest bits that have kind of ended up on the cutting room floor?
It's changed a lot in that, you know, I got to learn how to be a writer in those 10 years. I wrote it like straight out of the gate of uni. I'd not, you know, on like free software, like screenwriting software, just, and it was somebody who loved movies but still hadn't learned how to write, and I hadn't
like
found
finesse
the craft. And so like getting to work on other people's TV shows, directing Doctor Who, writing and directing Lady Parts, I just skilled up, so I was able to harness all the things I loved and just kind of shape it into a film that I think audiences can relate to, not be just totally bamboozled by. I mean, there's still some bamboozling, I think is wild.
In the best way. Yeah.
But I think that was it. You know, I felt like I got to really learn in those years.
And I feel like at the heart of this story, it is just about sisterhood, isn't
yeah.
it? And that's obviously something that I hugely resonated with, because I have an older sister. She got married last year.
Ah. So.
And you mentioned that you have your own kind of close relationship with your sister.
Yeah.
Do you see yourself as more of a Rhea or a Lena?
It's so weird because I started off as a Rhea when I wrote it because it was so long ago. And then I like grew up and I'm like, now I feel like I've had a chance to sort of sit in the world of both the sisters just because I've aged. But I definitely see myself more as a Rhea. I'm the younger sister. I'm fiercely protective of my older sister. And, you know, we used to get into wild fights when we were kids. And I remember she hadn't seen the film until like the cast and crew. And we were watching the fight scenes together, the one between the two sisters. And it was like both there. She was like crying her eyes out because he kind of just...
Yeah.
Yeah, it just felt really resonant of like, this is what it's like to have that sister relationship.
Yeah, because obviously it's very heightened, but it is, as you say, so rooted in reality.
Yeah,
and
that
is what sisters are like. They are bustling around yeah. together. And Priya and Ritu, who played the sisters, they're so enigmatic on screen.
Mm.
And their sisterly relationship, it does feel really real. I was wondering if you had the opportunity to do a lot of kind of chemistry reads with them, or did you just get really lucky that they were amazing
I mean,
together?
It was my intention, but I think it turned out that we couldn't quite get them in the same room when I cast Priya, because casting Priya came really late in the day because I just couldn't find anyone. And so she came in and she just blew us all away, and they worked so hard in creating that chemistry. They hung out, they rehearsed together, like, you know, that is so much due to their own, you know, natural talent, but also hard work of like cultivating that.
So I want to talk a little bit about your influences.
Okay.
I know that this film references a lot. There's, you know, the Jane Austen kind of Northanger Abbey mm-hmm. feel of it. There's some amazing martial arts choreography that feels kind of reminiscent of the Jackie Chan kind
yes.
of Bruce Lee classics.
Yes.
You are embracing the musicality of Bollywood. And I know that a lot of people kind of are likening you to Edgar Wright
yeah.
For having that kind of really snappy editing style,
mm-hmm.
the like very distinctive directorial style.
Mm-hmm.
Has Edgar been a big influence for you, or are there any other kind of big British filmmakers that have massively influenced your career?
Yeah, I mean, Edgar's been so kind and supportive, as well as being an influence, because I just was so I remember watching Shaun of the Dead and thinking, wow, I've not seen a sort of British film recently that's really embraced comedy in this way, but also has such a strong visual aesthetic. And I just love how he uses the camera to like accentuate a joke. It's not just about the dialogue. He thinks about it as cinema and as kind of sound design. And, you know, for me, music is so important. And like, I so love the rhythm of his work, and thinking about when I approach my films, it's like the rhythm in that, the musicality between the scenes as well as within the scenes. And I always sort of was so impressed by what he did. And he's been so kind and supportive as I've been making this film, as someone to reach out to and to speak to for advice, because he's been through it when you're making a genre mashup, and it's hard it's not always easy to sell it and to kind of put it into words. So, you know, he's been a big influence and a really kind and supportive, you know, filmmaker, friend, mentor type figure as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, absolutely. That's really nice to hear.
Yeah.
And of course, this is the Biffa podcast and it's our 25th anniversary.
Yes.
Are there any big British films that have had a huge impact for you personally
yeah.
or in your career?
I mean, you know, it's interesting. Billy Elliot was one when I remember when I came to England for the first time from Singapore. It was one of the first British films I'd seen here. And I was so moved by, like, again, honouring a sort of a teenage character, a sort of a child, and it being like centering the story. And again, I didn't know anything about, you know, the miners' strikes in that world and the British history. So that film not only like showed me so much about, you know, what it meant to be British, but also was this incredible, joyful movie. And, you know, I love the kind of more recent British films that are coming out, again, by my peers. My good friend Aleem Khan made his film After Love that just cleaned up at last year's Biffas. And it's just this incredible,
amazing,
moving, beautiful portrait and ode to his mother, you know, that really I just thought was such an excellent piece of work. And also, again, another recent film, because I'm just loving my peeps who are coming through now, Prana Bailey Bond's film Censor, which I thought was, again, like, proper British, like 80s, just, you know, horror inflected, just beautiful, thoughtful, and again, just on a lower budget, but just really maxing out like what you can do with that money and making this incredibly just poignant and terrifying movie. I loved it.
Yeah, no, honestly, fantastic. I think your films and your work will continue to be celebrated for just how you're portraying, you know, Muslim women as being, you know, so nuanced and complex, and most importantly, funny. Like, thanks. Really, really funny. You know, Lena and Rhea, they both have respectively these dreams of being a stuntwoman and an artist, and that in itself just feels very kind of anarchic, and it undermines those tropes that we've seen on screen so many times before. When is the last time you saw, you know, like a very complex Muslim representation on screen?
Oh gosh, the last time I saw it, probably the one that comes to mind is Aleem's film After Love. You know, the main character Mary in that film, she's a convert and she's like, you know, battling all these demons, and I don't know, I just think he brought her so vividly on screen. Joanna Scanlon's performance is amazing in that. That's one I look to, you know, and also like Miss Marvel. I mean, who knew that Marvel would have like a Muslim superhero? Like, that was, you know, I read those comics and I just like gobbled it up. I was like, this is brilliant. And then just to see it on screen, my friend Bisha K. Ali wrote that. I just thought she did a phenomenal job, and that's such a joyful representation of like what it means to be also a young Muslim woman.
Absolutely. Yeah, because you were going to direct some of that, weren't you? But that was in scheduling.
Yeah, you know, Lady Parts was happening at around the same time, but you know, they smashed it. I love that show.
Yeah,
so
it's
much.
Amazing. It's just because I think I've heard that you're a big fan of Queen.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to ask, which Queen song do you think best describes Rhea, and which one best describes Lena?
Oh my god,
I've got a couple if you need it.
Oh yeah, holy shit. I mean, I feel like We Are the Champions is Rhea's song, because that's like, okay, she is like, yeah, I'm a badass, this is who I am. For Lena, I don't know, something a bit more like Sad Girl. That, what have you got?
So for I went for Don't Stop Me Now or I Want to Break Free.
Oh, I Want to Break Free. Let's go
it
for
felt,
that one.
It felt good. It felt that's right. And then I also went for Killer Queen for Rhea.
Oh, I love Killer Queen.
Because I thought that was quite cool.
No, that could be like the sister song. Killer Queen.
Yeah, you're right.
I Want
to
Break Free for Lena, because that is... is that the music video where he's like dressed up as like in sort of women's clothing?
Yeah,
that
it's
music
so
video
good.
Is iconic.
Amazing. Thank you so much. Honestly, massively appreciate it. Best of luck with everything. Hey. Hope it all goes well.
Thanks
and,
so much,
Paris. Can't wait to see what you're going to do next.
Thanks. Oh, lovely to chat.
No, it's been amazing. Thank you.
Thanks
so much.
Ah, Karis, excellent interview as always. We'd expect nothing less from you, but I mean, a fabulous subject. So, I mean, how do you go wrong?
Thank you. Yeah, it's so easy when you've got such great like source material to talk about. I had written so many questions down, and to be fair, actually, I got through more than I thought. But yeah, we definitely could have spoken for another hour. There was a lot to dig into.
Yeah, I love that, you know, how kind of generous she seems as a collaborator. And I suppose that's one of the kind of wonderful thing that can happen in independent cinema. You're giving chances to people that don't have like huge franchises behind them. It's like a time where they can like discover people and discover like new things that they can do.
100%. I think that she just spoke really intelligently about her own process, but also her, you know, how she's got to where she is. She didn't go to film school. She really did work up the ranks to get to where she is. Even with this as a project, it was something that she wrote a decade ago and shopped around and around and around and got 100 no's. And then, you know, with the success of We Are Lady Parts, it finally got greenlit. And yeah, she just seems like someone who loves the collaborative process. I think that there's, as a writer and director, there's an idea from the outside that you're, you know, you are steering the ship, but that you have to be an expert in every single area. And I really like the fact that she was talking about how much she could lean on all the other experts and all the other heads of department, and how she met them all on her short film and they've all pretty much stayed with her on this film as well. So yeah, she's a very, very cool person.
Yeah, I mean, the whole kind of system that ends up paying it forward, because then it's like those people have now got a successful feature on their hands and they can go forward and make new, exciting stuff.
Yeah, 100%. Because I think, you know, a short film is always such a labor of love. And yeah, it can seem a bit like, why would we do this? Or what is the purpose of this? But I think that's a perfect example of actually how unbelievably valuable it can be. You know, even if that short film itself isn't recognized, the relationships that you build and the experience that you have will be invaluable in the next projects that you do. So no, it's very cool.
And I have to say, I you know, I have to confess that like of all the kind of tiny genres of film, coming of age is not one of my favorites at all.
Really? Like, oh, see, I love it.
No, I like Stand By Me. Okay. I like Polite Society. Mm-hmm. And I like her choice. I like Billy Elliot very much. It's a pretty irresistible movie.
I mean, you can't go wrong with Billy Elliot. It's a fan favorite. No, I was very happy when she said Billy Elliot.
It does seem strange to me, though, that there is also that kind of particularly British thing of, like, we make comedies about the miners' strikes. Like, I wonder if that kind of exists somewhere else in the world, where it's just like, we took one of the most horrible things in living memory and made it twee. I think this is one of the ones that kind of struck the balance right for me in terms of Billy Elliot. It does feel like a genuinely, like, elegant film. And as somebody that is actually also not that into ballet, it convinced me that this was a dream worth pursuing. And in terms of, like, launching careers, it's kind of pretty incredible in retrospect, because obviously Jamie Bell went on to be like a big star, but also the stage musical, I believe, was how we got Tom Holland.
I mean, yeah, the stage show, all of the songs written by Elton John, became like a global phenomenon, won Olivier's, Tony's, like it kind of did start a big cultural thing. It was a really big deal. I was quite surprised. It came out in 2000, didn't it? So I was pretty young at that point. But I was surprised that it was Stevens, who was the director. I was surprised that was his feature, looking back on it now. So, and it's nice that I think that Nida chose another feature debut for hers as well. So, no, it was very cool.
And people, they just come right out of the gate and they just know how to do it. It is funny because we talk sometimes about, like, that there is this lack of leading men and, you know, where are kind of next generation of British leading men and where are they coming from? And it does seem like they basically came from Billy Elliot Productions and the cast of Skins. And that's how we got them all.
That you really hit the nail on the head there. Maybe we need to bring back Skins. Maybe this is what we need to do. Where did it go? So sad.
Where did it go? And who is making the next Skins? I mean, maybe that is a kind of question that will become more difficult as the writer's strike rages on.
Yeah, true.
But yeah, I really do think that sort of meteoric rise is ahead for Priya Kansara. I mean, whatever a movie star quality it is, she just has it. She just dazzles on screen. She's so convincing as both kind of an action star, as a comedic force. And, like, you know, she's just got this sort of really, really moving connection to her sister as well, which is so, like, stunningly performed.
Completely agree. I did ask whether or not they did chemistry reads, because I was really taken aback by how kind of real that sisterhood bond felt on screen. And you're completely right. Apparently everyone was calling her Tom Cruise on set because she was doing all of her own stunts and was exuding ultimate movie star, you know, the persona. She just has it. Some people just have it, don't they? And your eyes are just constantly drawn to her and her performance, which is her comedic timing, but also she does bring a lot of levels of nuance and empathy for that character and what she's going through and struggling with, and that feeling of, like, losing a relationship with your sister. And so, no, she's great. She 100% is going to be doing big things after this, for sure.
I mean, it's something that so kind of applies to, like, women of color who, like, don't get the same opportunities as others. And you do think it's such a shame, because, like, an actress like this could, like, not be seen for, like, the multifaceted dynamo that she is. But, like, also, I mean, you were saying earlier about that she had to be so persistent to get this made, and it's like that still there's these people at the top, these powers that be, that can't see kind of young Muslim women in any kind of context outside of, like, what they've already been given. Then something like this comes along and it just smashes it.
Completely. I mean, complete hats off to Nida, because, like, she really is such a testament to persistence, that persistence is key. She had this idea, she believed in this idea, she kept going with it. And then I know she said at one point, you know, she just had to give up. It was in development with a bunch of different people and they all just kind of said, look, no, it's not for us right now. And she thought, okay, I guess this is it for me. Like, this is the end of the road for this project. I guess it's not going to get made. So it all really hinges on success, doesn't it? And, like, the opinions of audiences. But once finally her work was out there and it resonated, as, you know, of course it was going to, with thousands, if not millions of people across the globe, people were like, oh, maybe we should actually give this girl a chance. Maybe we should give her a feature debut. So hats off to her for continuing to persist. It's incredibly difficult.
I'm going to say it. I love it when you watch a film and you can just tell that the person behind it loves movies as well. Like, to all of the little references to, like, you know, to all these kind of fabulous Hong Kong action films, to The Matrix. Felt like there was some Edgar Wright in there, but early Edgar Wright when he was still great. It's almost like Tarantino-esque. Like, this is like, this is a filmmaker who just adores this medium.
1000%. It's such an homage to all the classics. And yeah, I think if you're a regular cinema goer, there's so much to enjoy. It's such a rich film. But to the cinephiles, they'll, who will notice those really kind of delicate details and those little nods to all of the filmmakers, it's such a satisfying watch. It's, yeah, it's great. The choreography is incredible. And then on top of that, them wearing these just opulent, incredible costumes is just, it's so kick-ass. You're like, yes! Just like want to scream at the screen.
Yeah, I mean, it really does seem like a such a shame that nobody until now thought that, like, kung fu action at a beautiful Indian wedding would create some of the most incredible, just like balletic movements. These garments, now I look at them and I think, like, these are designed to fight in.
Yeah, 100%. I almost wanted to just go out to a shop and, like, buy something immediately. I was like, this is so beautiful. I loved it. Yeah. And that's the image actually that's on the poster of the movie, and it's very cool.
Yeah, we're gonna go get ourselves some new outfits and go to a karate class, and soon we will be kicking ass just in the same way.
If I could perfect that final move, life done, life complete. Like, yes, I can die a happy woman. Like, I'd love that.
But, you know, also there's just something so lovely about, as much as I am hesitant with coming of age films, just watching some young, sparky kid with a dream, like, and seeing that fulfilled. Like, you kind of can't help but feel quite inspired by these sorts of things.
Yeah, a kid with a suitcase and a dream. It's a tale as old as time. I think it's such a relatable thing. We've all had that journey of discovering ourselves and our passions in adolescence. And yeah, and I think that especially polite society and the way it infuses, like, Bollywood music and the musicality mixed with that kind of Edgar Wright-esque directorial editing style, it's just really great. And, you know, obviously similarly with Billy Elliot, its use of musicality and, yeah, his passion for dance to kind of express that is really interesting. So there's definitely some overlapping themes between these two films.
Well, not least smashing the patriarchy in some ways.
Hell yeah.
Though I suppose in Billy Elliot, it's kind of the sort of toxic masculine expectations, but then also a little bit Thatcher. So I don't know if she's technically, that might be the matriarchy. But
yeah, it's complex, that one. Yeah, we'll dig into that a little more. But toxic masculinity, for sure.
Yeah, I believe I once read Nida describe it as it's a film with violence about the small violence that happens to women's bodies every day. And yeah, I read that like 2 months ago and I'm still thinking about it.
Wow. Yeah, I hadn't seen that. That's really interesting. I like that a lot.
Yeah. And, you know, personally, as somebody who, you know, I'm from North African origin, so I am very familiar with the torture of being waxed. So to see that being put on screen was like very refreshing to, like, just have a moment of just like, yeah, it really does hurt.
Honestly, that was one of my favorite scenes. And it's because it's so funny, but it's so relatable. And she, again, just tonally perfect. It was, yeah, you know, so many of us have been through that experience, and waxing is not fun. And I really like that she used it as this really kind of funny but torturous device. I thought it was really great.
I know you're not much of a horror fan. I'm an absolute obsessive, and I can sit through like the hardcore torture porn, like horrific stuff. I closed my eyes for that waxing scene. It was too close to home.
Stop it. Triggering. It's too triggering. Wow, that is so interesting. Yeah, no, you're right. I'm such a wimp. It's really embarrassing, but yeah. you can't help but kind of like have the little eye twitch as soon as you like watch the wax go on. You're like, oh, I know how this ends.
God, the things we go through as as women, as cinema fans. Like, it's you know, it's just very exciting to see some reasons to be hopeful for the future. I mean, what an absolute talent this woman is, and I've just adored her film.
Yeah, Me too. I cannot wait to see what she does next. I mean, actually, one thing I should have asked her is if there's going to be a second season of We Are Lady Part. Is that on the horizon? I should look into that.
I hope so.
I hope so. It's so good.
Yeah, it's been a while, but yes, I hope that she's able to kind of, well, I don't want her to overexert herself, but spread yourself very thin, you know. Work weekends. We want more films and we want another season.
She's definitely on my watch list now. So anything and everything that's coming out with her name attached, I will be there.
And if the Biffers come around soon and that Rising Star Award is not going to Priya, I will be rioting in the aisles.
Agreed.
So for anyone who managed to miss Billy Elliot or miss Polite Society, there is good news, is there not, Karis? These things are available?
There is indeed. The internet is a wonderful place. And
no, for that reason,
well, for this particular thing, it is. And so, yeah, if you haven't caught Billy Elliot and you want to watch it, you can catch it online, pretty much any store you can pay to watch it. So Sky, Apple TV, Amazon Video, and you can pay to rent it. And similarly, Polite Society is available DVD and Blu-ray release date from June the 20th and on Amazon Video and iTunes from the 16th of May. So enjoy.
Yes, I can kind of cast myself into the future when this gets booked out and hear the sound of a million double bills being set up, because that would be a great one.
Absolutely, yeah.
BIFFA celebrates, promotes and supports independent filmmaking and filmmakers in the UK. Keep up to date with the latest releases and exciting names in an independent film by following BIFFA on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube and Twitter. This podcast was produced by TCO London and edited by Bob Stankus.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.